All right. Did not expect that we would start the show here. Audible called. We've got Steelers, Texans. We'll do a ton of that. But the place where people have gone to read about sports in Pittsburgh for, I don't know, Chris, how long? 70 years?
At least.
The first Post-Gazette, the Pittsburgh Post, that came out in 1842. In the last hour, we've learned that the Post-Gazette will cease to be on May 3rd. And Donnie, was it you that first, we were all getting ready for the show. Craig was back there. Craig was telling us about some radio news, ironically, in our business. And were you the first one that said, wait a minute, the Post-Gazette's done?
Yes.
Was that a text you got or a tweet that you saw?
No, there was a tweet. But it was a tweet. Somebody texted me the tweet. But yeah.
What's your reaction, Chris? I mean, you've grown up here. I remember our first meeting as a station in January or February. It was February of 2010. You telling Cook about how it was like a pinch yourself moment because you were in the same room as the guy that you grew up reading as a sports obsessed kid and also a kid who didn't have cable.
And Ron life. Very notably got like legitimately mad at me because it made him feel old when I said that.
Man, I have a lot of thoughts. The first one is very basic. This is a bad thing, a bad day. It's another legacy media publication that has been around forever that is now not going to be here in 4 months. Where does that news desert go? The whole point is you got to be reporting on like what happens in this city. The city paper, Pittsburgh City Paper, which is like an alt weekly, also owned by Block Communications, just shuttered. In the last couple of days, the idea that an institution that when I was growing up, that's as big as the Post-Gazette was, is now just going to cease to exist with presumably, I would guess, a couple hundred people in total on all ends of the business being out of work is just a very bad thing. There had been a long running strike that had reached seemingly a conclusion recently with Block Communications losing their lawsuit about the whole thing.
And people going back to work.
And people going back to work, striking journalists going back to work. And the statement pretty overtly says, now it's in Block's terms here, the statement that's been retweeted a bunch by them. They say they've lost more than $350 million in cash operating the paper over the last 20 years. They said realities facing local journalism make, quote, continued cash losses at this scale no longer sustainable. It's pretty obvious that it's tied directly, I think, to losing this court case. They did not want to give a bigger piece of the pie to their employees, and now the paper's gone. So I think this is a very bad and dark day for media, and really for Pittsburghers, because whether you love the PG, didn't like the editorial page, whatever, it's the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. It would be if Channel 2 shuttered tomorrow.
Yeah,
it
exactly.
It is a similarly...
Well, KDK AM.
Yes, the oldest radio station in the country. It is a similarly like jaw-dropping and jarring thing to see right before we go on the air. So that is not a very eloquent, I guess, summation by me, but that is how I'm feeling. A little shell-shocked, frankly. There are people like me who ended up getting into this business who probably grew up wanting to write for the Post-Gazette. I did like small amounts of freelance work for them in the video form. Me and Sean Gentile, when he still worked there, like, you know, my name was on Post-Gazette, whatever you want to call it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
property in a sense. And now that's gone in 4 months. It's just hard to process, man.
I think about all our friends who are there and what's going to happen to them. Hiles, Fittipaldo,
Batco,
Mackey, Batco, all people that are on our shows all the time. Great contributors to the radio station. Starkey, who has his second job there, who it sounded like he was completely blindsided by this when he was on the air.
Didn't he just say that they had an opening? See, this is what makes me suspicious about the motivations behind it. He said recently there was like an opening for a writing job.
And he was recommending limits for it.
Right. So either there's a strategy here by Block Communications to try to use this as leverage to some, I don't know how that would, you know, play out. They just suddenly decided to shutter it all at once. Stop advertising for new positions then.
Well, how about just, you can't even sell it? Like no one, No one wants to buy some version of the Post-Gazette, have that iconic name, put out some version of news, sports news, sounds, sports opinion? Like, I guess not.
It does seem like we're... Yeah, if you wanted to try to make any kind of a profit, sell it to whoever. But it looks on its face like we're taking the ball and we're going home.
Donnie, were you growing up a kid that was a read the Sunday sports section, read the sports before you went to school? Was that part of your early years as a up-and-coming sports-obsessed human being?
A little bit here and there. I mean, I was more in the generation that already had things readily available if you toss on ESPN back in its heyday.
Yeah.
Like back in the good old days, or I could just watch
that's
SportsCenter.
That's part of the problem here, is that the way people get their sports news now has just changed unbelievably, and newspapers, I don't think, figured that out. I was saying to Starkey before we got on the air as we were changing shifts here that the problem I think a lot of these papers made when they went online was they started giving away their product for free.
Well, there's another huge problem. There's another massive problem.
People were used to getting, you know, people were used to reading it online for free, and then they put up paywalls and they said, screw it, I'm just not going to pay for it. I'll go get it somewhere else.
Well, the problem is that Google...
There's other places to get it now, too.
Google and Facebook obliterated the ad-based model. They completely destroyed it.
What do you mean?
Google, in terms of like the cut that Google and Facebook started to take for like online ads and the way they cut into the core advertising business that would sustain almost any paper. Like the New York Times has actually seen subscriptions jump in like a crazy way, but they're the New York Times. Google and Facebook essentially have killed the ad-based revenue model for papers. And I would blame them above all else for like just the dissolution of papers everywhere.
But I'm saying if you make it a subscriber thing, like people pay for TV.
I think it's right? A statement on the country, though, that people would much rather pay for a Netflix subscription where they can watch old episodes of garbage, basically, than actually pay whatever the monthly fee is to subscribe to something like the Post-Gazette.
Yeah. Well, but the other thing, too, is you could just get... People are going to talk about and disseminate the juicy parts of what's in that paper free of charge. Like, our radio station cluster here had a Post-Gazette subscription. If Dulac or Hiles or Mackey or any of those people wrote something interesting, guess what? I'm going to use that subscription, find out what they said, and dictate it on the air and ask people to react to it. You know, like, that's part of the issue, is that it's going to get out for free almost no matter what. The thing that crushes me is not only the people that are now wondering what's going to happen next for them, but it is just a sad, another example of things that I really liked as a young sports fan that are no longer what they were. Like, I'm sure you were somebody that after a Steelers game, you'd want to read Bouchette in the Post-Gazette the next day or see what Cook's opinion was.
I could not wait to read the Monday football season Post-Gazette was my favorite thing. I got Cook's column on it, Bob Smizek's invariably more pessimistic and acidic column on it, which I loved. It probably informed a ton of how I am now as a sports fan.
Yeah.
Neil Gordon and Jack McCurry, Penn Hills and North Hills respectively, head football coaches, grading the four facets of the game, coaching, special teams, offense, defense, and then it seems hokey now. I'm 40 and this makes me feel like I'm 70 to say this because like Jack is 20 years old in there. This probably sounds hilariously quaint.
Zach's probably never purchased a newspaper entire life. Ever bought a newspaper, a hard copy newspaper, Jack? He's saying no. Donnie, have you? You ever gone to a gas station or one
just
of those
purchased
old,
a paper.
You'd put the quarters in, you'd open it, and you were on the honor policy to not just take all the newspapers out. You're only supposed to take one.
I don't remember a time where I ever did. I just know that we got the Trib and the PG at home.
I had a paper route growing up.
You guys
up.
Had two subscriptions. You had both papers coming in.
I don't know how it would work. You know, I was a kid.
John
then.
Football was a consumer of news.
Well, a learned man.
Big time. I think maybe just Sunday he would double up. Either Sunday or Monday
too.
He would double up.
You get the big coupons that would come in.
Yeah.
sales that were out there. I delivered what was going on at Giant Eagle and whatnot.
Delivered, I want to say, the Post Gazette for a little bit. It was that or the Press. Like, my brother and I had a paper route.
That was the quintessential job when we were coming up.
Pony, they would routes. They would diagram a key play. They would choose in a Steelers Monday. They would do this like animation of a key play on the field with like, you know, that the drawing from overhead. So say they would have done the Calvin Austin, right?
Yeah.
It would have been a bunch of little cartoon looking football players in black and white ink. And it would have had like Calvin Austin do a little stop start. However, they would have animated that in Rogers' little dot, dot, dot pass, like a family circus comic. But I lived for that crap. And I say crap just like colloquially. I don't mean it that way. That was all I cared about on Monday morning. Dad, give me the sports section. Like, I would go out and get the paper at like 6:45 in the morning. Give me the sports section. I'm going to read it. Then I'm going to do the crypto quip. Then I'm going to do the jumbled words. And that it was an institution. And an institution is being snuffed out pretty much all at once here.
If any of our older listeners want to call in and share some old Post Gazette sports section memories, and or talk about this decision to shut down one of the most iconic newspapers in America, 412-928-9370. That's 412-928-9370. The Steelers are getting ready to play the Texans, but the biggest story in football is still this John Harbaugh situation. The Steelers got John Harbaugh fired. And now we're learning about why it happened. It seems very obvious that Lamar Jackson had a lot to do with this. Either Lamar Jackson was sick of playing for John Harbaugh, or the owner looked at the production of Lamar Jackson this past season and said, something ain't right here. We need to get a new voice to get more out of this guy. So any way you cut it, this has a lot to do with Jackson. What I find to be, from our perspective, the most interesting talking point from what happened late in yesterday's show is the reaction of Steelers fans to this. As far as, look, there were a bunch of different ways people could take this news. There could be the joy of watching your rival fire its coach and getting some kind of pleasure or perverse pleasure out of it, like, we did this to them, this is great. When the Steelers win, not only are we going to the playoffs, but we're also getting able to watch like another franchise kind of burn or blow up, however you want to put it. I think there's some personal animus among Steelers fans towards John Harbaugh. They don't like the cut of his jib. They think he's kind of an arrogant, smug guy. I would co-sign that. Kind of a punchable face, I would say. Not a very likable guy. So you see him get fired, and maybe you get a kick out of that. But more than anything else, the most interesting thing is the sheer number of Steelers fans who are jealous of the Ravens here. We ran a poll question at the end of yesterday's show. Are you jealous of the Ravens? Almost 50% said yes. Like, hey, I trade places with them right now.
I mean, we are the show that both of us said before the first Ravens game in the regular season, we would rather see them lose out because we wanted to see the coach get fired. That pretty much informs it in one neat and tidy little box.
But that was also said when the team was reeling and looked like it was pressed up against the dead end and looked like it was going nowhere. For people to say that a couple days after an unbelievably fun, dramatic game with the playoffs a few days away, that's just a very sober, analytical take, I think, to have on John Harbaugh's firing. Like, man, good for them. They're actually turning the page. They're admitting that playoff disappointments aren't good enough. They're going to try something different. Yeah, I might agree with that, but I don't feel that way right now with a game 5 days away.
Oh, I think you're just underestimating the depth of how angry Steelers fans have been at Tomlin, at Rooney, and at this franchise for years.
Do you feel that way?
No, I'd like to think that I'm looking at this in the moment and saying they are playing a playoff game. It would be unreasonable of me, regardless of whether I think they can win at most one game, to just turn my brain to, man, I wish this team wasn't in the playoffs, and I wish they had fired Mike Tomlin that would be better. Also, because I don't think the Steelers would have fired Mike Tomlin. There are a bunch of people acting like if that kick goes through, Tomlin might be out of a job right now.
Well, that I think graphic went on social media of Harbaugh fired, Tomlin fired, Harbaugh fired. And I said, this is so unbelievably inaccurate because he's not fired if that kick gets made.
That's what I mean. But like, no, I'm concerned with the game at hand on Monday night. And I am excited about it because it's a home playoff game in front of fans. And I think they have more than a puncher's chance to actually win it. But many, if I just go by social media here, Pony, many people that I know and follow are upset that they won. I have seen the phrase, thanks a lot, Tyler Loop. You just guaranteed 3 to 5 more years minimum of Mike Tomlin. Great job, buddy. There are Steelers fans absolutely as angry with Tyler Loop as there are Ravens fans. Or as angry as some Ravens fans are.
But if I told you, I know we both agree that he wasn't getting fired if that kick was made. But if I brought a football genie to you as Loop was lining up and said, hey, I just want to let you know, if he makes this, Tomlin's gone, what would you have rooted for? I'm still rooting for him to miss it, and I say that as one of Tomlin's biggest detractors.
I think probably miss it because I have to answer it this way. I think I'm rooting for miss it because as much as I have said, I just want to see something different time and again in this whole run, in this like entire stretch of years where it has become really stale, there is hardly a guarantee that Art Rooney II would get it right. In fact, I don't even think it's 50-50 that he would get it right.
I know, but that sounds a lot to me like, well, if you fire Mike, who are you going to hire? You know,
That's very different. That's very different. Who are you going to hire suggests that there isn't a better candidate than Mike out there. Which is not true. I am saying is, I don't trust the owner to actually cast a wide net and be interesting enough mentally.
I agree with you.
I don't
think those takes are the same things, but it's just like when people say, you know, that's apples and oranges. Well, they're still fruit. You know, they're still in the same kind of big family. Saying that, you know, I don't trust Art to get someone in here who's good at that job, to me is not totally different from the Tomlin defenders who say, well, who are you going to hire who's better? It's still projecting the next guy probably being worse than Mike just for different reasons, Chris.
Yeah, I know. But like in the Tomlin defender crowd, it's because they think Mike really is still elite upper crust coach. In my telling of this, it's that I think the owner would do a very bad job of replacing him.
412-928-9370. Here's Bob. Hello, Bob.
Oh, hi. Hello.
Hi, Bob. You're on the radio. Hello.
Oh, hi. Hi. Yeah, calling from Marysville. Tell you what, this closure of the paper comes as a gut punch. I mean, it was just such a part of my life, my goodness. And if you would think about, you know, the comics alone and a Sunday morning fantasy, it was just incredible. And
wait, what's the Sunday morning fantasy? Tell me what that was or is. I don't know what that means.
Well, you get the you get the comics, you spread them out, and then all of a sudden you're in another world.
Oh,
and it was,
okay. Going back to your childhood days of the comics in the paper, I got you. Were they still putting comics in the paper in 2025?
I don't know.
I don't.
I mean, they had a great comic section because I was a big Calvin and Hobbes kid, and that was that was the top one.
Thanks,
on the
Bob.
Sunday funnies.
Did they put local comics in there too? Were there specific Pittsburgh Post Gazette comics, or did they just
Calvin and Hobbes, like an editorial cartoonist? If that's what you're saying,
that's another job that's gone completely by the wayside. The cartoonist,
the editor, like the one who's doing a message. Yeah,
I loved those.
Yeah, but people don't now. Now it's memes. Wait, do you disagree?
I don't. It's Alonzo Mourning shaking his head and then being like, oh, wait a minute, this is actually isn't that bad.
Correct.
Just actually a good description of how the Steelers game went.
I mean, memes are bad.
Sunday,
I would rather read
read
a biting editorial cartoon than see somebody respond with the John C. Riley, I'm looking at you, Kabali, for the 87th time today.
All right, couple things here going on. Obviously, massive breaking news that the Post-Gazette is done in May. I feel for so many of the great people there that have contributed to our radio station over the years and still do, like Starkey. I think Cook signing on here when we launched in 2010 and Bouchette as well, like lent this station some really important, much needed credibility. I mean, the station put me and Chris on. And so that needed to get balanced out with people that had covered sports in this town for a very long time at an institution like the Post-Gazette, which was really good.
And Ed in particular, even though he would get hilariously grumpy. Well, I love Ed too. He would get hilariously grumpy with us.
I adore Ed.
But much like the way Bob Pompeiani has always treated you and I like equals and other young people in the business,
yep.
Ed would go on with us and he would disagree with us, usually me, and probably do a version of Mulsey. You don't know how good you have it with Roethlisberger at quarterback, but always treated with respect. And you and I probably didn't always deserve it at various points in time.
Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. We're reacting to the John Harbaugh firing in Baltimore and how that makes Steelers fans feel, plus the shocking news in the last hour or so that the Post-Gazette is folding, and May 3rd will be the final day of the paper. I had somebody tweet me and ask like what that means for us, and I would just say, big picture, about TV, about local TV, about newspapers, who knows, radio. I feel like at some point in my lifetime, we're all going to be working for ourselves. You know, I think a lot of these reporters will start some kind of
newsletter,
independent outlet. You know, maybe they'll band together, some of them. Maybe they'll just go launch their own website. And it's going to turn into this, I really feel this way. I feel like it's going to turn into this a la carte industry.
That's correct.
Where consumers...
pay $5 a month to try to get your favorite sports
columns. Consumers are going to have to make a decision. All right, do I want to go read this guy here? All right, these people are on YouTube. Do I want to go subscribe to their video? All right, these podcasts, so I want to go subscribe to those. Are any of those free? Are people getting charged? Who knows? But I mean, I think we see it every day where this stuff happens.
Well, like cable news and none of that stuff's ever going anywhere, in my opinion. Your Fox News, CNN, I don't think those are going anywhere. But as far as local print, I mean, it's already basically the New York Times, the Washington Post, you know, the huge papers that have the resources can stay in business. It is going to go a la carte. It is going to be, can you please pay, do you want to pay $5 a month to read this columnist? All right, do you want to pay $5 a month to read something completely different? And it's going to end up just creating a complete desert, I think, of local news gathering information.
Exactly. Because I was thinking about this too. So a lot of these people, I would think, have made great, you know, they've established brands here. They have a great audience here. So maybe they go and do things on their own. But at like teams have to decide, who do we view as legitimate media and who do we not? And that's harder to do when we're in this gray space of there's no more local newspapers. There's fewer and fewer local TV stations, sports staffs, things like that. I mean,
I think NFL teams, I'm not gonna say the Steelers feel this way, but this is a guess. It has been a general effort by all teams to beef up their own internal house media.
Yep.
Over the last decade plus.
Yeah.
And I suspect that those teams, which are all big individual big businesses, view with extreme contempt any reporting done on them that is unflattering by a non-team party, i.e. the Post-Gazette, Alan yep. Saunders' website, anything. Somebody talks to somebody, and then they report it, and there is no retraction because it's a true story. I think teams are going to happily pick off one or two of the people to come write for them.
I 100% agree
with
that.
You are going to get only what the team wants you to hear about, wants you to see. It's going to be sanitized and whitewashed, to use that term, to be their narrative. And the only kind of reporting you're going to get are people who are on the inside of that still deciding to leak things to like singular independent people. I will not say this about the Steelers, but my guess would be they are not displeased with the idea that, how many Post-Gazette journalists covered them in one form or fashion?
God, it's like seven? Five or six, I feel like. Maybe it is even seven.
I don't think they're unhappy. Or I could imagine them not being unhappy other than maybe personally feeling bad for these people, that the largest single entity that covers the team that presumably does not have any kind of connection to the team that would affect their coverage is now not going to exist. Teams, and this is my final part of this thought, just to get it out there. I think that's been the goal of teams, is to consolidate media control under their own umbrella. But I do wonder if they're going to find out that people get pretty ticked off when they can't read some sort of independent version of events. We always talk about how, like, players and coaches detest the media other than their couple of buddies. Like, Mike likes his few national buddies.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't get coverage from outside sources, it's the old tree falls in the forest thing to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, no offense to this guy, but I don't think Bob Labriola is the most read Steelers reporter. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that he works for the Steelers website. And every time there's any kind of criticism levied against a member of the Steelers, a player, a coach, whatever, that comes from his space, we always frame it as, oh my God, can you believe that someone who writes for Steelers.com just said X about Chase Claypool?
That means he's on the outs with them.
Yes, exactly.
Because usually if Bob chooses in his asked and answered piece to take a negative question from a reader, it is to spike the question, humiliate the reader in print, and stick his nose up in the air. And I'll say that out loud because I don't like Bob.
Wow! Shots fired!
I don't particularly like what he does. I don't particularly like the tone that he takes.
Well, he does wear Steelers Super Bowl rings.
And I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem saying I think that's loser mentality stuff. You didn't play the game.
Donnie, if you worked for the Steelers as a writer and they won the Super Bowl and they offered you a ring, do you think you'd wear that ring around?
Like, how often does he actually wear
routinely.
It? You guys have brought that up.
On game days, the rings are on.
My understanding is he doesn't just wear it for, like, special occasions.
Yeah, see, I think I would do special occasion. And
to wit, like, to me, the equipment managers and the support staff of the actual team do far more to help a winning effort on the field. What did they call it? What was the Soviet term? It was Pravda, was the newspaper. Bob ain't writing anything other than an editorial column for Steelers Pravda.
Text Jack. Does Bill have Steelers Super Bowl rings? If Labs is getting them, I think the play-by-play guy's got to get them. And I've been around.
Who creates more happiness for
Steelers
fans?
I've been around Mr. Hillgrove probably 100 times. I don't think I've ever seen him wear a Super Bowl ring.
Who creates more happiness for who over the years created more happiness? Bill with his calls of plays or Bob saying,
I think it's
how
funny that this is where we've taken the conversation. But now that we're
I'm
here,
feeling punchy,
I do think
though.
It's interesting. Mike Lang, God rest his soul. I've encountered him probably, again, 50 times conservatively. I don't think I ever saw him wear a Penguin Stanley Cup ring. I had five.
None that I was aware of. I mean, every time I was up close with Mike, he was just sitting there normally. But
okay,
what'd
he say, Don?
Billy does not
have one.
Have either Super Bowl ring.
I guess my just overarching point is to, you know, it turned into Bob bashing, Bob Labriola bashing, not Pomp, obviously, by me, and that's fine. I'll own that one. My point is that, like, in our narrow scope of this, once we get past the fact that I'm gutted for all those people losing their jobs, the Steelers are a massive deal in this town. They are an A-block news item when they play games. It's not like in L.A. where usually the Rams still aren't going to lead the newscast unless they win maybe the Super Bowl pony.
Yeah.
And so coverage on them, by definition, is important and something that is craved. There is now a massive coverage hole there that will likely be filled by maybe one or two of these people perhaps getting hired by the Steelers, at which point can't blame somebody for taking a job, but guess what? They're writing what the Steelers want them to write at that point.
Here's Sean on the fan. Hello, Sean.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Okay. What's up?
This is devastating. I mean, you know, look, I had a paper. I'm in my late 40s. I had a paper route when I was a kid. I grew up in Penn Hills. And I learned more about football on Monday afternoons after school delivering papers because all these guys in Penn Hills were waiting for that paper to be delivered in to talk about football. And on top, which is cool. It's a cool memory. But, I mean, on top of it, it's like, you know, I don't know. I mean, how do you not have an outlet now that is going to be unbiased? I think this is devastating.
Yeah, thank you. I think what we're trying to figure out in 2026 is how much that last point even still matters to people. How much do people care where it comes from? Do is there a good number of fans who actually just want the company punch?
Well, I was just going to ask you because, like, I don't. We're not news talk, and I'm not going to make this about that. But, like, in current events, don't you think there has been a rush to try to seek out,
I guess, like-minded people?
News and opinion, though, that matches up with your priors.
100%.
There. Think of all the accounts that we occasionally will jump into our mentions, more yours on Twitter, that are like Minkaberg, Pickensburg, Harmonburg. And the entire point of the account is to basically tell you that if you're negative about the Steelers, you can basically eat bleep and go away.
Yeah.
I do think there are plenty of people for whom company punch is very tasty.
Here's Rich next. Hello, Rich.
Hey, guys. I appreciate you taking the call.
Anytime.
You know, my first knockout punch was when the Pittsburgh Press went down. When I was a kid, I'm 74, so when I was 9, 10, 11 years old, I couldn't wait for the Sunday paper. Back then, I had a scrapbook where I would actually cut out every article that was printed about every Pirate game, the stats, the standings. I mean, these were big scrapbooks, like Life magazines and thick pages.
Rich,
and,
you're very similar to people of your generation and even younger. Like, it was something that people did whenever there was a big sports moment. You buy the paper the next day so you can frame that headline,
the commemorative
and that picture
edition.
Exactly. Like, that is now, like, those days are over. And that is kind of depressing to
Sports
me.
Sports Illustrated and newspapers sold deliberately to make money. Commemorative editions. I still have yellowed copies from Super Bowl 40, from Super Bowl 43,
same,
somewhere.
With the Heinz Ward,
yes,
smile.
I bought
this was every Sunday morning with us.
No.
I mean, you know,
wow.
We went to St. Elizabeth, so you couldn't eat breakfast for 3 hours before you went to communion.
3 hours? I thought
three
it was
hours,
1 hour. What are you who was your pastor, man?
Now. Hey, it was 3 hours.
Oh, my
it was 3
God.
Hours when I was a kid. Yeah. Monsignor Imicus, he wouldn't talk to me if I had an hour.
There's those Monsignors again, Malzi.
I was going to say.
Monsignor, dog.
Those
we can't get away from the Monsignor discussion on the show this week. All right.
And we're not Dan Zangrilli talking about the Padres either.
Listen to the PM Team On Demand, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Post-Gazette, closing up shop. Final day online will be May 3rd. Tons of our listeners have wanted to call in and weigh in on that. We've been talking about Steelers-Ravens. Pirates, 2026 optimism. A lot of that out there. Still trying to find a third baseman. Our 93.7 The Fan MLB analyst, former big league pitcher Matt Clement joins us right now. Matt, I know you're from Butler, but were you a guy that would read the box scores in the sports section of the paper every morning as a kid? Was that something you were into? Post-Gazette? Whatever newspaper? The Butler Eagle?
Yeah, there was a point in my life that I was a younger kid collecting cards and, you know, in high school doing some fantasy baseball and different things like that. That was a time frame. So it's always sad to... understandable to see the way that industry is going, but also sad at the same time.
Do you have cut-ups, newspaper articles from your playing career that were cut up by your parents or family members or loved ones and given to you that you still have somewhere in the Clement household?
Absolutely. I look through them, but my wife made me scrapbooks throughout the beginning of my career and even like some minor league ones where there are some articles written. And I, you know, I still have high school, part of our gift at the high school banquet for like basketball and baseball where the Butler Eagle articles, they put them all into one booklet and gave to us. So yes, absolutely. That's something that I do still have. You know, they're cool things to look back on for sure.
Matt, since you were a real athlete, you didn't have this experience, but Pony, they would do the box scores and like the leading scores for high school hoops games.
Sure.
And you had to be in double digits to get on the leading scores thing.
Yes.
And the one time I had a big enough game where I would have been on there, they were doing Christmas. It was Christmas tournament season. And that's when they were just reporting the score of the game. And so never even got to have that like leading scores, Chris Muller.
Man.
Yeah.
Tough break for Malzi.
Very tough break for a young Malzi.
Matt, what grade would you give the Pirates on their offseason so far?
You know, I would say, you know, we, the big question is, if you're basing this on past grades, recent past grades, it makes it even better. But if I was just going to give it on, I'd give it a B right now. I still think there's room to move up. I don't think there's a lot of room to move lower than a B. You know, you've got the left-hand reliever in Soto. You get Lau, you get O'Hearn, and you haven't given up Keller yet. So there's still like some room there and the potential maybe to be the best rotation. You know, I guess you can't ever look past the Dodgers as the best rotation, but the best rotation, second best rotation in baseball with Keller still there. So I give it a B right now. I like a lot of what they've done so far, and I still think there's some more out there. There's some more meat on the bone to go after here.
One of those names was Okamoto from Japan. They didn't get him. The Blue Jays did. Matt, what is your reaction seeing what he got, which was, I believe, 4 years, $60 million, so $15 million a year, at the Pirates not getting a third baseman from Japan that had generated a lot of interest?
It would have been I really liked that potential move for the Pirates, and what he's worth, I haven't dove in enough to what he's really worth on the market and if they overpaid for him or not. But I like the move of like the unknown that could really like be a bargain getting him at a price like that or a price lower. But the Pirates are in the midst of having to make themselves a viable choice for free agents like that. And when you're dealing with these Japanese players that are coming, they're posting to get the free agents, they're looking at the big teams, and right now Toronto is one of the teams that spent a lot of money, and they were just in the World Series, and they've been competitive for, you know, the last 2 or 3 years and then some. And so I think that's the big kind of the hump the Pirates have to get over to kind of take that next step to get a part of some of those deals.
Are you a Suarez fan? What kind of bat would that be for the Pirates lineup?
I think that Suarez, you know, like any club would love to throw somebody that hit 50 home runs in the middle of their lineup. Absolutely. You know, it's going to cost, and unless this keeps going further and further and the cost comes down and down, I don't know if that's the right move for the Pirates necessarily. And you know, if he has a fault to him, boy, he has absolute power. He's a great player. I think it would be a great signing for them. But if he has a fault, he strikes out a lot on a team that strikes out a lot. I still look at like Alec Bohm or Vientos from the Mets as like a, you know, maybe make a trade for one of those guys and maybe make a trade without having to get rid of Keller in that trade. And you really kind of hit the jackpot. That grade goes up to like an A- maybe if you're able to do that. But again, Suarez, I think he'd be a great fit, but a team that's trying to really fit a lot of puzzle pieces together at a small cost, he's going to be a big cost unless he becomes a bargain here at the end.
Matt Clement, our 93.7 The Fan MLB analyst. Matt, thanks for jumping on with us today. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks, guys.